And as football fever recedes, I'll be talking to Irishman Billy Lavelle from Blackrock, who has survived large bears, swarms of mosquitoes and masked gunmen while cycling from Alaska to Argentina.
You know, Patagonia is obviously a famously beautiful place in parks, but for the last good few weeks I've been kind of just making sure that I've had a place to stay indoors, which can be a challenge in itself because it's so isolated down here. So are more than any stage of the entire trip relying on the hospitality and the help of strangers.
You can email mooney@rte.ie or send a text message about anything at all right now to 51551. Yeah, I'm looking forward to playing you that piece with Billy a little bit later on. It's an interesting story because it's an extraordinary journey he's made from the very northern tip of Alaska all the way down to the southernmost tip of South America. I mean, that's an extraordinary journey because up to now, the best of my knowledge, that the mammal that makes the longest migration on this planet is a whale called the grey whale. I've seen them on their breeding grounds in Laguna San Ignacio in Baja California, and they travelled from Alaska all along the North Pacific all the way down. You pass in places like Anchorage, then you're coming down past Washington, you're coming down places past like San Diego, and then you come past the Gulf of Mexico, and you come around there and you come into that little arm that's stretching out into the breeding lagoons that are there, and then you make the journey all the way back. But this fella did all of that on land along the western coast along the North Pacific, then he traveled into Central America, then he hugged again that coast, and then he came into South America, and then he came all the way down and came through Guatemala, and masked gunmen jumped out with guns and tried to rob his clothes and everything else. And then he went all the way down into Ushuaia, which is the southernmost tip, pretty much. Well, it's the last city. It's the southernmost city, I should say, really. It's not the southernmost tip. The last city be at the end of Argentina, and then the next stop is the Antarctic. That is an incredible journey on a bike. He did it on a bike, Brenda.
And Derek, there are you. You think you're great cycling into work a few miles every day. And tell me, I'm just wondering, if he went from Alaska down to the bottom of Argentina, did he have a GPS on his bike, or how did he find his way around?
That is a very good question.
And
no,
I'm only
idea.
A girl.
Probably
coming
Route
up with
66.
That.
Yeah. No,
I just thought you were into all your bike accessories now.
Well, I don't have
a
GPS. I know my way into work.
Your Lycra and everything.
Three saddles.
Three saddles? You
later.
Don't have three
yep.
saddles later.
Yep. I've decided now I don't need one. The cushion that is on the saddle, heaven's sake. No, they give me a cushion. You can get a gel cushion to put on the saddle. Now, Sinead's outside. She rides her bike as well. And I went through three saddles and a cushion. And you put the cushion on top of it to make it more comfortable for your buttocks.
Yes.
But it didn't work. So I've taken that off and I've gotten used to it. It's fantastic.
Sorry, do you know
the
what
best
you're
thing
like?
In the world?
Do you remember the story, the fairy tale, the princess and the pea? You're the,
I'm like
princess.
Yes. I hope so, yeah.
Yeah, and there you have a little
what's
pea.
What's the story of the princess and the pea?
Princess and the pea. This woman arrives at a castle and says, I'm a princess and I'm lost in the storm. So to try and find out, are they a real princess? Mm-hmm. They bring her into her bedroom and they pile it with mattresses, loads of mattresses. Mm-hmm. And she has to climb a ladder and get to the top. Mm-hmm. And they put a little pea underneath the bottom mattress, and then if she is a real princess, she'll be used to luxury, she won't be used to having anything uncomfortable, she will notice that there's something awry with the mattresses.
Oh, I see, with the pee. I
so
see, yeah.
She came down and she said, how did you sleep? And she said, well, I was very uncomfortable during the night. So they discovered
she was
uncomfortable during the night.
Yeah.
Sorry about that. So they discovered that she was actually a princess because she felt the bed was uncomfortable, and they put a pee in. So that's how they knew she was a
real
princess.
Well, I certainly
noticed
if my bike
hadn't.
No, I'd noticed if my bike had no saddle.
Yeah.
Certainly be uncomfortable. Who's it said? I'm sure it was the Andy O'Mahony show. That, no, I won't say it because it's not very pleasant or nice towards Limerick. But at any rate, I was listening to Ryan Tobriety this morning. Did you hear him?
I heard some of them, yeah.
Oh, talking to him, you know, many partners have you had and all that kind of stuff. And are you truthful about the amount of partners? And he asked someone, you know, how many partners? And it was a strong question to be asking
very
somebody on the air.
Question,
well,
yeah.
Of course, the lady said, not just the one. My husband.
Of course.
And he says just the one as well. They were going together a long time. And I thought, what was the first person you had? And she said, my husband. And I would have asked, what was the last?
Oh, yeah.
Because that's the hard question to answer.
Well, that's the one we don't know, do we?
Yeah.
We've gone from whales to talking about infidelity. Why
anyway,
not on this programme?
The grey whale, it's some migration, 10,000 miles, something like 18,000 kilometres. Would that be correct thereabouts, give or take the odd bit here and there,
wow,
depending on which way they go? And this gentleman, Billy Lavelle from Blackrock in County Dublin, he used to work in a bank, and 2 years ago he set off on this journey, as I said, from Alaska all the way down to Ushuaia in
South America and Argentina. We can find out what the mood is like in Argentina there as well today. But anyway, some journey, that's 28,000
amazing
kilometres this guy has done. That's an extraordinary journey on your bike over 2 years. And he just wanted to do it. And some people want to do this kind of stuff. They just want to take off. He had a dream. And he acted upon that dream. He said, someday I'm going to cycle through South America. And he did it, despite all of the problems he encountered en route. Mosquitoes biting his bits. And then big bears standing up and roaring at him and all that kind of stuff. He still went ahead and did it. Do you want to do something like that? What is your journey? And I'm not talking about when Jerry Ryan said, where would you like to be right now in this moment in time? We all know what happened to that one, the poor old late Jerry Ryan. But, you know, where would you like to go? What would you do, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Get in touch. It was the end of the road in the World Cup last night for Argentina, as you know, and Argentina is quite literally the end of the road for a 37-year-old man from Blackrock in County Dublin who has just finished the most extraordinary road trip on a bike. Billy Lavelle has spent the last 2 years cycling solo from the highest point of North America that's accessible by road, Prudhoe Bay.
We've northern lights in the winter, nights and sun in the summer day. We cool our heels in the Arctic waters on the shores of Prudhoe Bay.
It's taken him through the wilderness of Alaska and Canada, where he had a close call with a black bear. All the way through the United States of America, where one of his highlights was cycling across the Golden Gate Bridge in San Francisco. On down through Mexico, passing through 12 other Central and South American states, including Peru, Costa Rica, Colombia, and Guatemala, where he survived being held up at gunpoint, to his final destination in the southernmost city in the world, Ushuaia, in Argentina. And with all that going on, I understand that the music he really wants to hear, and I mean really wants to hear right now, is this. Billy, I know you've been on a long journey, but my goodness gracious me, not that I'm saying there's anything wrong with it, but you want to hear Fair City music? What's all that about?
No, I was just joking about, like, you know, the South American soaps are pretty famous, so they're pretty cheesy, but nothing obviously compares to Fair City, so...
nothing compares to Fair City in a cheesy way or in another way? What do you mean?
just in a cheesy joke kind of way about the... I was staying in a house in Bolivia in a Casa de Ciclista, kind of a cycling house where they look after cyclists, and there was a Brazilian guy staying there, so I hadn't seen TV in a few months, thankfully, but he was obsessed by his Brazilian soaps, and they're very dramatic. They're kind of, they seem a bit overacted, but they're quite entertaining to watch, like, but I'm not sure I could, I don't think I'd be taking time off the bike to catch my Brazilian or Colombian soap, but they're very popular.
They are.
They're quite funny, though.
The acting is pretty...
The overacting in it.
It's overacting. I was going to say, the acting is something that has to be seen to be believed, and usually the storylines
exactly,
are a bit on the bizarre side as well. But listen, let me talk to you about your journey, because are you in Ushuaia now? Is that where you are?
I am, yeah. I arrived in Ushuaia just over a week ago now, so still trying to kind of get my bearings, almost, like, you know, letting it settle in. So Ushuaia is the southernmost city in the world. So it's been my target for a long time at this stage, so it was great to finally make it here. It's a beautiful, it's a small city, it's a kind of a ski, it's kind of got a winter tourist trade, being the winter here at the moment, so there's one or two ski resorts nearby, but it's surrounded by snow peaked mountains, so cycling out this morning, it was just taking it all in. It's absolutely a spectacular spot, so it's a nice place to finish up the trip.
No, I was just thinking about your journey before we came on air, and you are the land-based equivalent of a grey whale. Why do I say that? Well, I tell you why. Have you seen any grey whales, by the way?
No, I missed them in... I don't know whether they're grey whales or what kind of whales, but when I was in Baja, California...
They'd be grey there, yeah.
The
breeding grounds.
The season that was in December, and I missed that by a week. I was hoping to get out and visit it, but the national park or wherever it was, that didn't open for another week, so I had to push on. And actually in Argentina, a bit further north, in a place called Puerto Madryn, it's actually the season at the moment, so I'm hoping I'm going to look for a job here in Ushuaia, but if that doesn't work out, Puerto Madryn will be my next port of call. because it's the season for seeing the whales up there at the moment. So that would be, apparently you can see them, you don't, like, there's obviously boats out to it, but I've been told you can even see it from the town that, or once you're close to the coast, that you can literally see them from land kind of breaching, coming out of the water. So I haven't seen any whales, but I may see some yet before I make it home. So that would be pretty cool if I got to see that. But yeah, I've seen lots of different cool wildlife, but a whale isn't among that yet, you know.
No, the reason I say it is your journey. I mean, you started in Alaska, the very tip of the northernmost part of North America, and you make your way down to the very tip of the southernmost part of South America. As I said, next stop then would be Antarctic. And that journey you made, something like 17,000 kilometres, or what is it? What do you know? How many miles
it's,
or kilometres?
28,000 kilometres.
28,000 kilometres. Okay, yeah. Well, I mean, that grey whale does a 10,000 mile round trip, which is something like 18,000. It's an extraordinary journey all along the Pacific coast. And is that the same route you came? Tell me about your journey. Where did it start? Which way did you travel?
Yeah, the same kind of track. Like, I came not always, obviously, sticking to the coast, but pretty close. I was always on pretty much over on the west side.
I believe you had a close encounter with a bear en route as well.
Yeah, that was near the start. So obviously, leaving from Prudhoe Bay, like, I was very conscious, you know, I had to do, I think it was over 3,000 kilometres, mostly through wilderness and bear country. So, I mean, there was lots of jokes among my friends and my dad about the teddy bears before I left. So, I mean, it was certainly playing in the back of my mind. And I had some bear spray posted up to me from Fairbanks by an Irish couple. So that was lucky to have that, because even as early as Prudhoe Bay, which is literally, as you know, as you might have seen on the map, the northern tip of Alaska, mm-hmm. I read accounts of a few years prior to my trip of cyclists being chased out of Prudhoe Bay by a grizzly bear. So I knew literally as soon as I left I had to be conscious, and I was carrying, because it's 800 kilometres to Fairbanks, which is the first town after Prudhoe Bay, so you're literally carrying 2 weeks worth of food with you. And, you know, what they say in these bear protection kind of, if you read anything about bear safety, they'll always tell you not to get out of your car. But I was cycling with 2 weeks worth of food with me, so they have a very good sense of smell. So whenever I'd be eating and that sort of thing, I would always eat and then cycle another 15 kilometres or so down the road and make sure to always have my food at least 100 or 200 metres away from me, just to not to be taking any chances. But I did get to see a few bears. The closest encounter I had was just in the Yukon, just shortly into Canada, where I was cycling along, and you wouldn't see many cars, but there was a car just up the road ahead of me coming in the opposite direction, and he kind of stalled or stopped by the road. And I was wondering what on earth, I was thinking, what's going on here? And it was almost as I cycled by that I realised, just caught out of the corner of my eye, just up to the right, there was a large black bear who, just as I was passing by, standing up on his hind legs. They kind of stand up in the air sometimes to sniff the air and to get a better vantage to see what's going on. So certainly a rush of adrenaline, and I didn't hang around to take the photo, but you just hope for the best in these situations. And thankfully the car was there, and a lot, like, drivers and people up in that part of Canada and Alaska are certainly well versed with seeing bears and being careful with bears.
They know what to do. All right, I'm just thinking,
this bear along with spotted the bear just before I did, so he was decent enough and sensible enough to stop and to wait till I passed on the bike until he headed on. So he owed him possibly my life, but it was a scary moment, all right.
And you started your journey in the height of summer, so you must have been eaten alive by midges and mosquitoes and all sorts of things.
That was actually the worst thing. You know, I was going up into northern Alaska, and my main concern obviously was bears and wolves, but by the time I actually got to Fairbanks, which is, as I said, 800 kilometres, I was absolutely cursing the mosquitoes. They're almost the size of a small bird up there. Like, and even within the first day, I quickly learned that, you know, even to take a photo, I wasn't even stopping on the bike, or I was undoing my camera while cycling and turning on the camera and taking a quick shot and then just pedaling on, because it was absolutely horrible. And obviously with all the amount of gear and food that I was carrying, I was going at a pretty slow pace. And particularly, there was a lot of hills there as well, so particularly when I'd be going up a hill, I would literally have this cloud of mosquitoes. It was horrible. And I hate mosquitoes at the best of times. And I remember my dad, who had spent a bit of time in Canada, warning me to bring kind of goggles because some of these insects go for the kind of the soft spot around your eyes. And I was kind of laughing to myself, thinking he's just it's been a bit he's being a bit extreme here. But literally within my first night, I had my eye goggles on, and I had this kind of full body suit that I bought. There wouldn't be an exaggeration to say well over 100 mosquitoes hovering around me trying to get any bite they could. And when I put up my tent, I was really wondering what on earth I'd got myself into, because, you know, a week previous I'd been hanging out in Dublin, and then I'm up in one of the most isolated parts of the world surrounded by mosquitoes, and it wasn't going to get any better as far as I could tell for the following few weeks. So that drove me absolutely mad. So by my last day on the Dalton Highway, which I still had close to 100 miles to do to Fairbanks, I decided that I'd had enough of the mosquitoes. So I decided to cycle through the night because there's enough light up there, as you might guess, up in northern Alaska in the summertime. So I just decided to go for it. So I was making sure to eat every 4 hours or so to keep the energy levels up. But by around 10 o'clock the next morning, when I still had maybe 30 miles to go to Fairbanks, I was getting very tired, so I was kind of noticed myself nodding off. So I kind of reckoned it was only a matter of time before something happened. So thankfully I had my helmet on, but I had kind of thankfully I wasn't going too fast as well, but I had kind of a slow motion crash, just because I was so tired. So I remember a guy who had toured up here before telling me just on the outskirts of Fairbanks there's a brewery, the first brewery in Alaska, in a small village called Fox, saying, "Oh, you have to go into the brewery and have a beer." But the first thing I did when I got to civilization was into the petrol station to get a coffee, because I was still just nodding off, so there's no way I was having a beer. But I was pretty happy when I finally got to Fairbanks, because there was an Irish couple, Catherine and Ellie Brosnan, who'd moved out to Alaska years and years ago, who looked after me when I got to Fairbanks. So I got a big hug off Catherine. So that was pretty relieved to have finally made it without the mosquitoes. So coming to, obviously, Alaska's over there in the west, and then I came down, once I hit the coast around Vancouver, I came down all the way down the coast there, down as far as Baja and through Baja, California. And then once I was in Mexico, I kind of cut inland and I got to visit some spectacular colonial cities past Guadalajara and into Mexico City, and then kind of stuck in the middle of Central America, but touching the coast at times. And then once I hit Colombia, there's no road in between Panama and Colombia, so you have to. That was unfortunately a stretch where I had to get a boat. But as far as Cartagena and then into Colombia, then shortly a few days cycling into Colombia, then I hit the Andes. So that was a pretty epic moment. It just literally crossed a bridge and the climbing just started, and knowing that climbing wasn't really going to end for the most part for the next, foreseeable future. So then came down through the Andes, which was extremely challenging, particularly in Peru. But some people do go along by the coast, but I was talking to a few cyclists there a week or so ago, and they came along by the coast of Peru, and that's equally challenging just with the winds and the heat, and apparently also it's a higher likelihood of getting robbed along there. So I mean, I wasn't keen to do the coast, even though the coming by the mountains probably added at least a month onto it. But
listen, I'm told that you put your life on the line in Guatemala. What happened to you there?
I was travelling. I was lucky that a good friend of mine, Rowan Gallagher, was cycling with me from Mexico City to Panama City, so that was a stretch where I wasn't cycling solo, thankfully, in hindsight. But yeah, it was going to be our last full day cycling in Guatemala, and you know, even though Guatemala has its dangers and we're trying to be careful most of the time, and we kind of talk to each other about what we do if anything bad happens, it was our last full day, and we're cycling down a kind of a dirt track, having left a relatively poor town where we'd been taking a few photos, and I'd had my mobile phone out just checking directions on the map, because when we arrived into that town it was on a paved road, and we were leaving the town it was on an unpaved road. But anyway, around 5 kilometres down the road, Rowan was around 20 metres up ahead of me, and he ran around the corner, and I just heard, "Billy!" So I come around the corner, and there's three masked men pointing a gun at Rowan and then onto me. So it was kind of your worst nightmare scenario. So they were telling us to get into the bushes, so Rowan had kind of dropped his gloves on the ground to try and delay a bit, and we basically were trying to tell them with our limited Spanish at the time that they could take all our stuff, they could take everything, but we weren't going to get into the bushes. So There was a guy with a handgun, and there was another guy with kind of a larger pump action type shotgun. So the guy with the handgun shot it into the air and pointed it then back into my face and said, "Get in the bushes." And the three guys were pretty agitated. So obviously, once that happened, we weren't going to argue with them, and we went into the bushes. We wheeled our bikes into the bushes. So one of the guys reversed the car around. They had the car with the number plates blocked out, and the two other guys with the guns came into the bushes with us, and one of them was kind of kept the guns kind of focused on the two of us, and the other guy went through his went through our bags. So it was pretty scary, obviously, you know, there's been way too many people have died in Guatemala over the years, so you're kind of very conscious of this. But after a minute or two or a couple of minutes, we were kind of thinking, well, hopefully this looks like they're just after our valuables, which, you know, isn't ideal, but, you know, you'll go with that if it means you'll survive. But Rowan, my friend, he plucked up the courage. He'd been travelling before he joined me on the cycling. He'd been backpacking in South America with his girlfriend prior to this, so he had a lot of photos on his hard drive. So he plucked up the courage, or maybe he's just mad, to ask these guys for his. He explained to them with his Spanish that it's not of any value, the hard drive, but it's a lot of, you know, sentimental value to him, and if there's any chance, would they mind giving this back? And it was quite funny him explaining this with his limited Spanish to these guys, these masked men with guns, because it was a pink hard drive and it was kind of a fluffy kind of flare on it. So he's trying to describe this to the guys. Can I have my pink hard drive back? And thankfully, they actually did give it back to him. So he was very lucky. He was either going to go one way or the other. So thankfully, he survived that one, and he actually managed to get his hard drive back. So masked gunmen with a heart, obviously, you know, to give the hard drive back. But we were pretty shaken after it, as you'd imagine. So
they basically just took your valuables and let you on your way, sort of thing. They didn't take your bikes. You're lucky they didn't take your bikes.
No, I mean, like, because I've heard of numerous stories in Peru along the coast where a jeep pulls up and they literally throw your bags and your bike in the back of the jeep, and
they
just
leave you there,
with clothes on your back, if even, and you're just, you know, walking along a highway hundreds of kilometres from any town. So
tell me, did you find yourself
in relative terms? Yeah, we have to consider ourselves lucky. They did take our valuables and the electronics and that, but I mean, you know, the amount of people have been killed in Guatemala over the years, like, I think we'll certainly take that. Like, you know, I'm very happy to have made it here to Ushuaia in one piece. Like,
I'm just thinking, I believe that you have a favourite quote with which kept you going throughout your journey.
Yeah, which I'm probably going to mess up now, but it runs along the lines of, it doesn't matter what lies behind you or what lies ahead of you, it's what's inside that counts. That's kind of paraphrasing the quote. But you know, before I left, I was kind of, you know, you hear of these motivational quotes, and it's something that I definitely, you definitely use, because it's obviously, you know, the biggest thing is really just what's going on in your head, to be honest. Like, so on the tough days, it's just a question of kind of sucking it up and really trying to just to push yourself or whatever. Like, because I'd done one or two marathons before, so I kind of just use that kind of training just to, in a bigger context of the cycle, just like when you're struggling in the latter stages of a marathon, just focus on getting to the next lamppost or getting to the next kilometre.
Exactly.
So just in the bigger context of the cycle, of just concentrating on that particular day or that particular week. Like when I was leaving Alaska, I certainly wasn't thinking about Mexico or South America. It was just about the next few days in Alaska.
Well, listen, you made it. Was there a big group of people waiting there to greet you? Were the bunting, was the bunting up? I mean,
in Ushuaia.
Yeah, when you got there, did anybody know who you were even when you arrived? I mean, you've made a journey, started 2 years ago, you've travelled 20-something thousand miles,
no,
and you turn up and nobody knows who you are. Come on, did you have it arranged? What?
Yeah, it's funny, like, you do a big thing like that, or if you're doing a marathon or something, you might have a pal cheering you on at the end. Like, but no, there was nothing like that, even though it was far bigger than any marathon I'd done. But thankfully, even though I hadn't seen another touring cyclist in months because it was so cold down here in Patagonia, but literally on the last night before I arrived into Ushuaia, there's a small town called Tolwyn, where they have a famous bakery that's kind of famous among the touring cycling community. And I arrived in there, and there was two American cyclists, so I was pretty shocked to see them. I think they were equally shocked to see me. So it was great to have a bit of company for my last day into Ushuaia.
There may not have been anybody standing along the side of the road to cheer you on when you cross the finish line, but we're here on national radio doing it for them. All right, just before
I appreciate that. It's good to hear the congratulations. You know,
well done. It's some journey, Billy. It's a life changing journey, I've no doubt. Tell me, what's the atmosphere like in Argentina today?
kind of Monday morning, I suppose, so people are going about their business, like when I was cycling out here this morning. So I think people are just, you know, I mean, last night after the match, like, there was obviously silence when Germany scored that goal. My heart went out for the Argentinians, like, but, you know, within a few minutes of the final whistle, they were out onto the streets waving their flags, beeping their car horns. So they certainly weren't getting too depressed about it, like, in fair use to them, like, you know, they've done extremely well to get as far as they did, like, you know, so I think they took the defeat well, like, obviously disappointed, but still out celebrating last night.
Well, Billy, well done, congratulations to you, and we might talk to you when you get back to Ireland.
That'll be great, thanks a lot, thanks for having me on.
Yes, I would. If I could, I surely would. I'd rather feel the earth beneath my feet. Yes, I would. If I only could, I surely would.
Lovely piece of Simon and Garfunkel at the end of that. A wonderful piece which you recorded a little bit earlier today. Now, how did that lad's mum not have a heart attack while he cycled through the world? I'm a mammy of a son and I worry when he goes into town, which I know is very dangerous, but nothing like what that lad did, says one of our listeners. Would you be worried now if your little Harvey told you tomorrow? What age is he now? Five?
Five.
Yeah, he comes in, he says, "Mom, I'm going to cycle from Alaska. I'm going to cycle all the way into Argentina." "When, Harvey?" "Well, I was thinking of going next week."
I'd be more worried if he says, "I'm going to Tenerife or Magaluf with the lads."
What's
for
going
the week
on in Magaluf?
I don't know. But I would be more worried about that, actually.
Would you let your daughters go to Magaluf?
Not unless I was with them and had them kind of on a chain.
But do you watch what goes on in? You know, they've got this series
of
programmes.
Oh, yeah, sometimes, yeah.
What goes
sometimes
on in, yeah, what goes on here, what goes on, yeah, there. And the carry-on is,
I know.
Look, that's what people are doing.
I know. But you know, I went out to Ibiza many, many years ago on the Jerry Ryan show before all of this became really, really popular. and experience the whole thing, the parties, the all-night beach parties. It's amazing. And I went to Manu Mission, you know, the parties with the foam coming down on you. You know, it's part of, I suppose it's a rite of passage for a lot of people, and they're all doing it.
Did you do it?
A little bit, but it was true work.
But you probably did it now at some festival in Ireland.
I know, we did
what
go camping.
What did Christy Moore sing about?
Hill.
Oh, Liston Varna, Liston, Trip to Tip. One of our listeners called Please, because they ended Please, so I presume that's their name. So
okay.
Please says, what does cheesy mean? Please ask Derek, please. All right, so cheesy, well, I suppose. I mean, I'm not a connoisseur of cheeses, good, bad or indifferent, but I think when you say something is cheesy, it means it isn't particularly good quality. Isn't that what it means? I think something around that.
I always get the impression.
Hang on a second. The boss is telling me something in my ear. She's better informed than I am. So hang on, and I'll just listen to her, and then I'll tell you what she says. What she's corny, she says.
Yeah, I
no,
would agree
I
with
wouldn't
that.
Have said corny. No, well, uncool.
That's
no,
part of it.
No.
Well,
yeah,
John
uncool,
Kenny
corny,
is cheesy.
John.
Joking.
What?
Joking.
Kitsch.
Yeah.
Schmaltzy.
Schmaltzy. No. That's the expression.
Well, if I said something was cheesy, I'd kind of mean wasn't
not
kind of
cool.
Great.
Kind of great.
Who cares about cool?
No, but that's the impression. It's not
who cares about
hip.
Cool?
It's not in.
Schmaltzy.
Anyway,
by the way,
I didn't use the term cheesy.
I think I did.
When?
In reference to one of the songs we were talking about earlier.
Yeah, somebody says sweet and fun, but uncool.
Yeah.
I didn't use the term cheesy. Was it?
No, it was me.
Billy who said cheesy? Was it somebody who said cheesy? Well, Damien's pointing at me. When did I say cheesy? In relation to what? Did I say first that he was cheesy? I said the music was cheesy. When did I say that? You guys are going to get me. I'm going to get myself sacked by having a conversation with you and saying what I said. I probably said all this off air. Probably never said it on air at all. I said, I better not say that. That's like Tourette's syndrome. I probably said it. I said all this stuff off air, and then I know I'm after inadvertently saying it on air. I'm gone.
John said you're looking for an extra part in Fair City. That's all that's going on.
Well, you know,
there.
I would like to be an extra in Fair City. Do you remember Ruth Buchanan? Ruth Buchanan was an extra on Glen Rowe, and I was raging years ago because she went down because she used to do your gig, Night of the Dogs. Didn't you do Night of the Dogs a few times?
Yeah.
And she appeared because Dinny had dogs.
Yeah.
Greyhounds.
Yeah.
What are you laughing at me?
No, it's great. I just love the idea that she'd go down and be on Glen Rowe because Dinny had dogs.
Well, I think that was part of it. Anyway, and there goes that cheesy again. I didn't say cheesy. They're going to check the tape to see if it was me who said it. All right. And if I said cheesy, I promise I'll eat some cheese tonight. If I said it. If I didn't say it, I'm not going to eat any cheese at all. Brenda, speak for yourself. We did not all do it. I think the emphasis should have been all rather than not there. But anyway, we did not all do it. We had no money. I blame the parents for handing over the money, says Sue. And that's in relation to going to Ibiza and doing those things
Magaluf
that you'd be doing
and
when you're on the holiday in Ibiza.
Crete and all of those islands. Yep.
Were you ever at a foam party?
Yes.
And did you ever feel stingy after the foam party?
No, I never did. No, no.
But what did you do getting into the foam party?
It was in my swimming togs and I danced around.
The one thing they don't do when they're in the foam party is have a wash. I can tell you that. What did you do? Come on.
I danced.
How old were you at the time?
I was, 22.
Right.
Okay.
And were you married at the time?
No.
No. So you were single?
Single.
And were you going out with anybody at
no.
the time?
No.
No. So you went on who did you go with?
What?
Who did you go with?
I went on my own.
No, you went on your
I
own
was
on holidays. You're
doing
Jerry something for Jerry Ryan show. And they dispatched you to a foam party.
In Ibiza.
And then what happens? Tell us.
Well, I can't remember that much, to be honest with you. What I do remember is your arms were checked as you went in for needles and drugs and things like
Lice.
That in your handbag. And the drink was extraordinarily expensive. And I couldn't believe it because we were all on the floor and everyone was dancing. And then the foam just came down and it was crazy fun. It really was crazy fun. And we danced like nonstop all night.
That's what you do when you're 20.
And did anybody
anyway.
Kind of, you know.
Do to me.
No, did anybody kind of make a move on you? Yeah. Or did you make a move on anybody?
I might have.
And do you feel, oh God, I should never have done that now. It's outrageous, it's scandalous stuff. And people were making love in the foam party and all that kind of stuff.
No, there probably was a bit of that going on, but I didn't see it.
I did.
Covered in foam.
Get over yourself, Brenda. You're full of
it. Too busy washing me hair.
Tell the truth. Come into my confessional.
Listen, you're trying to get me in trouble today. I know you are.
No, I'm only asking. I've never been to a foam party.
Have you not?
No, I haven't. I know people who are at foam parties recently and they told me that they put some chemical into the foam and that you're supposed to oil yourself up before you go to the foam party. Otherwise, you get burdened on the skin and in parts of your body where you never thought you'd get burnt. So be careful if you're going to be indulging in foam parties. I'm not suggesting you do. I don't care what you do, it's none of my business, but I'm just saying be careful.
I'm not saying I do this every day. This was many, many years
ago. Take precautions.
Yeah.
Carmel Dignan has been on to say that cheesy means off, as in gone off, I presume. Off. Anyway, have you got the clip? Or you got the clip? Because I don't remember saying cheesy, so they've rewound the tapes and we'll see. And with all that going on, I understand that the music he really wants to hear, and I mean really wants to hear right now, is this. Billy, I know you've been on a long journey, but my goodness gracious me, not that I'm saying there's anything wrong with it, but you want to hear Fair City music? What's all that about?
No, I was just joking about, like, you know, the South American soaps are pretty famous, so they're pretty cheesy, but nothing obviously compares to
Thank
Fair
you.
City, so,
as Gay Byrne would say, I didn't say to Fair City in a cheesy way or
said
another
way.
No, I said, are you referring to Fair City in a... referring to Fair City in a cheesy way, or I didn't say it was cheesy. Thank you very much indeed. Wouldn't be saying anything like that.
You are always right, Derek.
No, I'm not. Sometimes I'm not right.
No, I don't
I'm
believe
never wrong.
That. I don't
Shocker.
Believe it.
But on this occasion, I hadn't said that.
You're right.
I
wouldn't dare. That's funny.
I mean, you wouldn't come on attacking your colleagues and another part. No, you wouldn't. If you wanted to keep your job, you wouldn't. But anyway, I didn't say it. That's the point.
Okay, well, you're right. You're right. Okay.
Very good.